This is Michael Scharf. The date is September 8th, 2010, and I'm sitting with Tony O'Doherty at the Central Drive Community Center. Mr. O'Doherty is a community activist, and he is also the chairperson of the local community group here on the Cragen Estate. Mr. O'Doherty, thank you very much for agreeing to this meeting.
No problem, Michael. My pleasure.
If we could just start off perhaps with you introducing yourself and perhaps explaining how you got into community activism.
I like many people, I probably might never have been involved in community activism had it not been for the Troubles. But my own background, I played professional football here in Ireland for a variety of clubs. I actually played at international level for Northern Ireland with people like George Best, Pat Jennings, Derek Dugan. You know, some soccer followers will recognize those names. But around about 1970, I began to question what was the point in taking part in a sport when the area that I grew up in and where I still socialize, which is here, and where I still work, was basically in ruins. So myself and a few other people got together and formed the first little club here for young men. We had an amazing football league here. We had over 600 participants in this field behind you, which you now see as a state-of-the-art AstroTurf fourth-generation pitch. When we played on it, it was a grass field with nothing. And we turned it into a football pitch, and from there we had a little social club, and we kept that club going, and a little drop-in centre, particularly for teenagers, and we've kept that going since about 1970, 71, right through to now. And that brings us right up to where we are now. That's the history of how I got involved in community activism. You know, the subject that you were talking about, Michael, was elections and violence. And the one thing, I think it was Mark Twain, I think, is credited with saying the only two things in life are absolutely certain is death and taxes. Well, I could have given him a third one, and that was election night in Derry, that there would be violence. It was absolutely nailed on every election night. The guys, the young men in particular, were waiting on it for weeks in advance. They prepared their stocks of petrol bombs, stones, you name it. And obviously, a lot of it to the young men was what we now call recreational rioting, but a lot of it was founded basically in the fact that the police were just not acceptable at that stage. I showed you outside, Michael, the location of the polling station. I showed you there was only two ways in, so no matter what diversionary tactics the police used, we all knew they were going to end up here around about 10:30, and the guys would be hearing huge numbers and, you know, stones, petrol bombs, quite significant rioting in some stages. We would have been on the streets doing our best to calm that down. We'd have been on the streets before it, trying to see if with our local intelligence we could find out whether stocks of petrol bombs, etc., were. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we're not. But this was not, you know, some of the rioting was very, very bad and went on for quite a length of time.
When was the first year that you were on the streets sort of assisting the community in looking for troublemakers and looking for petrol bombs?
Difficult to say now what the first year would have been. You can do something with the tape and I'll get you the date. I'll talk to Sean or someone who remembers that. But we certainly were doing it for quite a number of years. And part of the problem is that the young people that we were talking to, the troublemakers has to go in inverted commas. They were from our community. We understood their attitude to the police. We didn't think it was very educated. We didn't think it was the right thing to do. And we consistently tried to put forward an argument that there was more harm being done to our community than the police in their armoured Land Rovers. We won some of that argument, sometimes, but overall, the rioting still persisted, you know?
I know.
Sean made a good point there, for your reference point. From after the Good Friday Agreement, which was 98, then we were would have been trying to make the elections violence-free, if possible. Up until about 3 or 4 elections ago, you know, so.
Was it your responsibility as a community activist, as working for this neighbourhood, to do that?
Or? Well, as a community activist, no one sets you out, as you well know, Michael.
Yeah.
No one says this is your job. Your job is what comes to you, you know. Mm-hmm. And our point was that with the Good Friday Agreement, we didn't want another generation of young men growing up believing that, that violence was the answer to anything.
And when you say we, you mean this neighborhood group here
I would say that in this particular situation, mm-hmm. we were speaking for practically the entire community. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt about that one, you know. We were certainly speaking for all the established political parties like the SDLP and Sinn Féin. There's no doubt about that. SDLP and Sinn Féin people would have been on the streets with us. Now it would have been mainly Sinn Féin people, but SDLP people would have been there helping as well. So we were speaking for the entire community who'd come through years of violence, seen death and destruction up close, and wanted to move away from it, and had voted to move away from it. The problem we had here was that you still had young men who still saw the police as their enemy. And the one occasion that they knew for sure that the police would be in this area was election night. And they spent, as I say, quite considerable time. And if they put half as much effort and ingenuity into all parts of their lives as they did in ambushing the police, and we can joke about it now, you know. Some of them would have been running about with PhDs or masters, I'm absolutely sure, you know. But as I say, we the violence got really bad on some occasions. So we met and tried to, when I say we, this initiative mainly came from some Sinn Féin people approached me and said, look, if we stayed out of this and made it non-political, and you were able to meet with your counterparts in... That's the end of it. With your counterparts in other parts of the city, in other words, chairmen of local community groups, and how would you folk feel about taking this idea forward to the police? So I met with various people in the...
Just for our timeline, do you remember... approximately what year this was when they first approached you?
I wouldn't, Michael, to tell you the truth, but we can do it very quickly. You can do it online because, and I'll tell you why, Peter Hain is the Secretary of State. Mm. Check when Peter Hain is the Secretary of State and you'll find out very quickly.
All right.
When you get to my age, Michael, the years just fly.
They all blend together,
yeah,
right?
They do, actually. Yeah. Believe it or not, they do.
Do you think this was before 2000 or after 2000?
I would say it was after 2000.
Yeah.
But we definitely could put a time frame on it through Peter Hain. Yeah.
Because actually one of the difficulties that we're having, or one of the questions we still need to try to answer with this research, is exactly where this idea originated. That
Ricky Russell could almost tell you, I'm sure he, because he would keep notes, he could tell you exactly. No, he's, I don't know if you intended to.
I did. He's actually no longer
correct
here.
But if you can, I'm sure they get you a contact from him, you know.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And he would have kept notes, I'm sure.
Sure, sure.
Well, that's how it came about. There was no, just that crowd out there, just do not answer for that one.
They got it. Right.
So, as I say, that's how it came about. Several people approached me from Sinn Féin, put this idea to me. I must be honest, I was sceptical at the start. I thought, well, it's not going to work because the police will never go for it. I just can't see it happening. How is it going to work? We were so conditioned with what we had. But we had, I think we had two meetings. And I had two meetings with Sinn Féin on my own. And then I thought, let's broaden this out. Okay, let's see where it goes. Contacted people like Charlie, who had a very personal interest as well. Charlie would have been here every election night helping us, because it's his school was, you know, was a target for the petrol bombs, etc., etc. And there was quite a lot of damage to the school at times. So Charlie was here helping us on the streets. So I approached Charlie, and then I approached the chairs of all our community groups in the city, and we met. And we kicked it about, and one of the problems with people going to meetings, I'm not a great meeting goer, as people will tell you, nor am I sometimes a great Democrat. I think when an idea is very obvious, I think, you know, I think it needs doing, and then let's see what comes out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, some people took a little bit of persuading, but we eventually had a united group that requested a meeting with the police.
Just to yep. clarify on this subject before we continue to move the story forward, Sinn Féin approached you to say, "Hey, look, can you kind of go ahead to the police and pitch this idea?"
Well, their belief was that if we took the police out of the equation, that the elections would be violence-free. I wasn't totally convinced, I have to be honest. I was not totally convinced about that. But nevertheless, we had tried everything else, and sooner or later we were going to have a tragedy. Either a policeman was going to be killed, a young person up here, or young people up here were going to end up with criminal records, end up in jail, whatever. But there was going to be a tragedy sooner or later. Simple as that.
And do you think, were they also, at the same time they were approaching you with this idea, were they also going to other community groups at the other sort of five or six hot spots, if we can call them that, and pitching the similar?
If they were, then I'm not aware of it. If they were, I'm not aware of it. I was, as far as I was concerned, the deal that I was making with them, if you want to call it a deal, was that I would go and pitch this idea and keep politics right out of it. But it's not coming from Sinn Féin. I didn't share that with people that it was coming from Sinn Féin. I'm sharing that with you now, Michael. I did not share that with people. The idea, and that's why people think that the idea came from me or from the Cregan group. Because if I had gone and said Sinn Féin, the politics being what they are, you know, and it's exactly the same in the States. If a Republican goes with a good idea to a bunch of Democrats, they may not look at the idea, they may simply look at the messenger, you know?
Sure, sure.
So same thing. So I didn't tell people that.
And what was Sinn Féin's interest in all this?
Well, interest in, and again, and now that they had taken the political path, quite obviously that they had an interest in making sure that the elections would take place and that people would see the elections as being something completely divorced from the previous past of violence. Mm-hmm.
And also perhaps vote count as well, right?
Of course.
Lower the violence, more people come out to vote.
Absolutely.
Sure.
But you know, Sinn Féin were, at that stage, I'm sure, they can speak for themselves, but I'm sure they were, they had told people, let's have a new, better society. And people obviously would be saying to them on election night, where's the new, better society? So I'm assuming that was their thought pattern, you know.
Sure.
But this was never sold to anyone as a Sinn Féin idea. They spoke to me, and that we carried the idea as Cregan, speaking to Shantalo, speaking to the Bogside, speaking to Hazelbank, Ballymac. Those are the four electoral areas in the city. And the chairs of the community groups met, and we, you know, again, they were sceptical, as I was, that this would work, but we kicked it about, and we thought we've absolutely nothing to lose.
And this was probably in roughly around 2004 or so?
I think it'll be slightly before that, but we'll try to get you a timeline before you leave. We'll try to get you an exact timeline, you know.
All right. Because we know, just for the listeners, the The violence was quite bad in 2003 and 2004, and then somehow, in some time between 2004 and when the elections in 2005 were held, that was the first time in 2005 when the police weren't there. So something happened, particularly in that year.
Well, I'm not so sure that something happened in that year, mm-hmm. Michael. I've already discussed this with you. When we had the meetings with the police, we found Richard Russell, who was in the policeman in charge. We found him very open, very, very open to the idea. I would have to put on the record that some of his other officers weren't so open. But he, I think, from what I knew of him, seemed to be a very professional policeman who did genuinely want to serve the community. He went for it. Very, very quickly. Didn't need an awful lot of persuading. I was quite surprised. The meeting we had with Richard Russell wasn't a very, very long meeting. And we went ahead, and as I say, he went for it. Now, we now had the other side of the coin, Michael. We had got an agreement from the police that they would stay out during the day, that they would not come up for the election boxes. But in fairness, I have to put this on the record, they did say that if they were called to the area, if there was violence, for example, kicking off, and they weren't there, that they would come in. They reserved that right. But they gave us an agreement that they would stay out, and it was agreed that civilians would collect the votes. And the other side of the coin was that we then had to take to the streets and persuade our young people all over the city that this wasn't a con. We weren't trying to con them that the police would not be here. And they could, you know, they just didn't believe it. I told you that outside here at the Craigan shops, we had maybe 200, 300 gathered. And I have no doubt that they had their stores of, shall we say, ammunition fairly handy. But just after 10 o'clock, a car, a people carrier, as we call it here, drew up. A male and a female get out, walk into the building, and a few moments later walk out with the election boxes. Put them in the car and drive away. And the guys can't believe it. And I'm saying, no, that's it, guys. And that's a bluff. You know, they didn't believe it. And they hung about for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you know. But eventually it got through to them. There was absolutely no violence, and we had that replicated right throughout the city. Hmm. Now, the police don't actually have a legal role on election day. It was just that here in the north, it became simply the modus operandi that they, you know, to protect the election box. But it was proved very, very quickly. Very quickly. I mean, it literally just happened that night. And as I say, the young people stayed about for quite a period of time, believing that we were working some con, that the police were suddenly going to appear, you know, maybe at midnight, maybe, you know, whatever. And some of them, I'm told, because I went to my bed, Michael, at some stage, but I'm told that some of the local kids hung about the next morning, absolutely convinced that the police were somehow going to come in and get these election boxes. And that's how it happened. And like a lot of good ideas, when you look at it now, it's so simplistic and so blindingly obvious that you say, why did we never do it before? And like, you know, like a lot of good ideas, I think human beings, we just become conditioned. And I told you this story, I told you a little story, which I think is worth telling, you know, not for my part on it, but just about the Secretary of State. One of the PAs, or personal assistants, at Stormont, which is our legislative assembly, was a fellow called Paul Sweeney, who's from Derry. And I was giving a radio interview. And I had said to the radio reporter, I'm whatever age I was at the time, I certainly was in my late 50s, that's for sure. And I had said to the radio reporter, you know, I'm 50, let's say 58, whatever it was, and this is the first time I've ever seen this. This is the first time, and this is democracy in action.
He taped that. And I found out later, I didn't know at the time, he sent it off to the Secretary of State, who was Peter Hain at the time, in the Labour government. And some moments later, I was asked, I was working, and I was asked, could I get out of my work if someone wanted to meet me? It was quite important. I came out of work, went to the Rathmore Centre, where assembled a lot of local business people. Everyone, I told you, everyone was in suits, looking really good, all the great and the good. I arrived in, a pair of work jeans and steel-toed cap safety boots, as you can see I'm still wearing. Still wearing. And to be told that the Secretary of State wanted to meet me, and I thought, my God, that's amazing. Was it me? The hell would he know about me? So Paul Sweeney approached me and said, look, I played the tape of you saying democracy in action, and he wants to meet me. So I told a lovely little story. He came across to me, the Secretary of State, shook my hand and said, we have something in common. I said to him, well, I've never been Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, so what is it? And he said, we both played at Wembley, and I explained to you that I, in a previous life in 1970, which you can see in the record books, I played at Wembley for Northern Ireland against England. He was telling me that he had played in a charity game the previous week for the MPs, the elected representatives against the press, which is played for charity every year. But he was so taken with this whole idea of local people, if you like, I would hesitate to to draw any comparisons with the likes of, in fact, I'd be ashamed to draw comparisons with the likes of Iraq and places like that, where people, put their lives in the line. But I suppose, in a British or Irish sense, what happened was a little bit, certainly in an Irish sense, it was unique, that's for sure, as I say, I sat with the Secretary of State for half an hour, can't remember what we talked about. I'll tell you this much, it was mainly football. It was nearly all about football. He was a big football enthusiast. But it just showed how that little initiative reached all the very highest levels of, and we've never, ever had any violence in election night since.
It's an amazing story of how you go from such a small community here to sitting with the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland and acknowledgement that this is important, and he sees it as
amazing,
as important.
It's an amazing
too.
That part of it is amazing, as I say, and it was down to Paul Sweeney, who was PA at the time. His phone's drive me. That's the story, Michael. And as I say, you couldn't make up the part of it being Hain. It was absolutely incredible, And it seemed to just finish a lovely. You don't often, and you get many knockbacks in community work, as I'm sure you know, many, many knockbacks, and sometimes we wonder, is it all worth it, but this was clearly one of those occasions when it was worth it. And I would like to believe that Peter Hain, in meeting me, was an acknowledgement through me, since he couldn't meet everybody, of all the people who put so much into it, the Charlie O'Donnells, the Charlie Tierneys, the Sean McMonagalls, the Barney O'Hagans, the people who had put so much effort into it, And I took that as this is his way of acknowledging to a community. Mm. And he's done it through one person, which is probably the only way he could do it,
It's a curious story, too, in the sense that, here's the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland acknowledging what's gone on, taking an interest in this. And I wonder when we get back to the question of, who gave the green light, or who gave the go-ahead to take this decision to remove the police at the end of the day? Whether it was a decision that really came from, some might even speculate, Westminster.
I don't know. If it did, I don't know. What I can say to you is this, with a slightly different hat on, I also would do the same type of work for the local football club, Derry City. And we had, Derry City had some football games with Linfield. Now, in straight Northern Irish terms, so you understand, Linfield were for years an exclusively Protestant team for an exclusively Protestant support. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not like that now, but nevertheless, they're still very much seen as the standard bearers of Protestantism in football. And they were coming here to the Brandywell. And we don't have any, we're the only football club in the entire football world. We have no police on the ground. We self-police. And Richard Russell agreed. And his predecessors have since agreed. Even when Linfield come, we run the security. No police. So Richard Russell is that kind of policeman, that's what I'm trying to say to you. If there's a story there that somehow Sinn Féin knew this would be accepted, then certainly I wasn't aware of it. But I'll tell you now, Michael, I would be very, very, very surprised. I actually believe from what from Richard Russell's record and how he handles things, you know. The fact that he would I know that I'm absolutely sure he faced resistance from his own policemen over the Linfield thing. He got some very serious criticism for allowing us to self-police that from the DUP. Some very serious criticism publicly. So, you know, for your own research, I'm saying to you, he has a track record of being, I suppose policeman can't be a free thinker, but he was incredibly open-minded and could see things very, very strategically in terms of the community and not just the police, you know. So I always put it down to his ability to be open-minded. I don't believe, now you may find something out, but I don't believe there was any behind-the-scenes conspiracy deal. I don't. I genuinely don't.
And so leading up to this decision, you have this meeting where all of the sort of the heads of the community groups get together, decide that let's now approach the police. And so you approach the police. So there's a meeting where it's the heads of the community groups and the police.
Yes.
Is this one meeting or are there successive meetings?
There was two. I think it was two meetings in total.
Okay.
Two meetings in total.
And what's being said at these? Are they taking place at the barracks down on Strand Road or are they taking place up here? Or
they're taking place mainly in neutral venues. I think one was in the Guildhall, and another one might have been in the council offices. I think that's where it was, the city council offices.
And what's being said at these meetings?
See, we couldn't have had those meetings in the barracks. Our credibility within our own community would have been damaged. You know, we wouldn't have went to the barracks. Because I can't come back to my community and stand out there and speak to kids at the shops if they know that I'm down in the barracks meeting the police. I can't do that.
Because they would see that as conspiring with the police.
Would damage our credibility. So those meetings took place. The second one, if I remember correctly, definitely took place in the city council offices. And as I say, Richard Russell seemed very open to the idea. Said he would give it a try, and you know, with the proviso that if they were needed, they would come in.
Was there anyone else there present? It was the community group, heads of the community groups. It was the police, and we're just for our research. We love to just get the like technical, operational.
Sure, you had the police were represented, the community group heads, and we had. I can't remember his. There was a fairly senior officer from the city council. I think it was Tony McGurk, but I don't want to say that for sure because, and I think he was acting chief executive at the time. It's an hour meeting I've done. That one, no, this is one done. I've already done that one. So. That's who was there. The city council then bought into it. So you can see that it was now non-political. Totally, you had the chairs of the various groups, various areas. You had the acting chief executive of, or acting town clerk, I'm not sure, but he was a very senior person in the city council, on board. So you can see quite clearly. How are you doing?
Hi, Chief.
Lovely, thank you. You can see quite, see you later. You can... Mr. T. O'Dorney, Chairman, very good. You can see quite clearly that it started with people from Sinn Féin talking to me. You can see it expanding.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
I go and talk to the other chairs, so you know a second circles like ripples, you know. We the city council, because we're very close to, because I discussed it with the local councillors here, Kevin Campbell of Sinn Féin and Jim Clifford of the SDLP, they take it back to their respective parties. The parties obviously say, this is a fairly good initiative. We need the council maybe to head this, to give it a bit of political, non-political weight. You know what I'm saying? So they appoint a very senior officer and say, here, this is now your initiative. You go and meet these guys and run with it, right? So you can see how,
you know,
starts here and branches out. So when we have the meeting with the police are sitting looking at community representatives from all across the city and a very senior officer of the council saying that he is speaking with the full authority of council.
The way politics works, and forgive my lack of understanding of how the city council actually works, but so you speak with the local Sinn Féin SDLP members, they who sit with the council.
Yep.
They go back to the council.
Yeah.
Now, in order for the head of the council to, who is present at these meetings with you and the police and the community, other community representatives, in order for the him to be able to take that decision, would there have to be a vote within the entire city council? Would this issue have been debated in an open session, for instance?
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe so. I think it would probably have come up with maybe, say, the policy committee, or, as you well know, it's no different in America. The real deals ain't done in the Senate or wherever.
In the coat closet.
Absolutely. And probably that's what it was. They probably, the heads of the, particularly the two nationalist parties, have probably got together, said to the chief executive officer of the council, this is a bloody good initiative, you know, for our city, see what you can do. And it was done.
That's interesting.
I certainly don't believe there'd be any open vote, that's for sure.
The mayor at the time was Mr. Gerard O'Hara, I believe, Sinn Féin.
Gerry, yeah.
Would he have had a role in this process as the mayor?
No, not directly, no, because that would have made it political. The reason that the council sent an executive officer is that he is a salaried employee, not elected to represent any particular group. But nevertheless, it's sending a signal.
Interesting.
Had the mayor, you know, the mayor was quite clearly very helpful in the background, no question of that, of course, and used whatever clout they had to push this. But we couldn't have brought Gerry directly on board because we were there and had signed up to, this is us, the ordinary people saying we want to try and stop this. This is not, we're not doing this on behalf of Sinn Féin. We're not doing this on behalf of the SDLP. We're doing this on behalf of ourselves. That was the key.
So did you have to, was there a, I would imagine you sort of had to keep this pretty quiet from the community while this was happening.
Yes.
Because
first of all, we could have ended up with an egg in our face.
Yeah.
You know, let's be realistic. We could have went to the meeting and the police could have said, no, go away. But it worked out okay in the end up, you know.
So when you first sat with Ricky, did you think they were going to buy this idea?
No. No.
And why is that?
Well, I mean, historically, the police here very much did their own thing. And, you know, we were just coming out of conflict. It was very early days. I have no doubt that there would be people within the police who would resent a bunch of civilians coming and trying to change the whatever, you know, with a role that they saw that they now had taken on historically, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that, and I don't think that would be different in any community, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, as I say, Ricky Russell went for it very quickly, and what I found out from in all our experiences with Ricky Russell in later years, that was the type of policeman he was. He was open to suggestions from the community.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, and again, this is asking you to search back in your memory for dates, but do you remember precisely when that decision was finalized? So you had these two meetings, and was it at the second meeting that they would have said, okay, this is the plan,
we're gonna go
let's go to it?
Yep.
It was.
And would this have been a month before the election, do you think, in 2005?
Or it was a few months. It was reasonably close to that. Mm. You know, it was fairly close. It was like a 46 weeks window. Mm. And of course, you know, this is. The police, quite obviously, will also have known when they met us that we had buy-in from all the groups. You know, Sinn Féin, the SDLP. We were non-political, but they would have done their homework. They knew that we had buy-in. And I would imagine that in particular, they would have needed to know that we had buy-in from Sinn Féin, who would have had a lot of activists at that time on the streets. Mm. And they knew we had that buy-in, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Without anybody at the meeting having to say it, you know.
Yeah.
You know. So I would imagine, and I'm only imagining, you need to talk to Ricky Russell, but I imagine Ricky Russell sitting around saying, well, okay, I'm talking to these four guys, and I know them, but I know they've got the buy-in of the local communities, and in particular the guys who go on the streets.
Yeah.
So he would have known that.
So
he would have had some confidence, I would imagine, this might work.
And that's really fascinating because this decision's taken at the second meeting. Now you come back here to the estate, and as we know, the political parties have their people on the streets, their former IRA on the streets that are kind of pushing people away, the kids keeping the kids away on election day. From what I understand, there are a lot of actors right here, just for the listeners. I mean, we're looking out here on the street right
in the quite a lot of actors. We have everything.
Do you now come back after this meeting, after the decision is taken, and do you sort of round up everybody for your own meeting just for the estate to say, look, this is the plan, this is what we agreed to, this is what's going to go down on election day?
I would have not done that until almost right up to election day, mm-hmm. knowing that the reality was that Sinn Féin would have told their people anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're in the loop, obviously, and they would have told their people, right? Now, the people that, if you like, I would have got would have been non-political, and they would come out with me no matter what the occasion is. So, we waited right until, because there were still question marks, Michael, this much I remember, right up to election day, we were still concerned, will the police pull back on this? Think on the things that could have went wrong. Will some of the kids start the violence early and give the police the opportunity to enter the area? All that could have happened. So we were walking on eggshells right up to, you know, right up to the two election, but which is why I was so relieved on the radio and why I sounded so relieved. We were walking on eggshells right up until that moment. Mm. We still weren't sure. A lot of things could have gone wrong. Mm-hmm. You know?
Especially if the kids lured the police and gave them reason, fed them the bait.
Yep.
Perhaps because they had been tipped off in advance by Sinn Féin that the police weren't necessarily going to come unless you give them reason to come.
Well, we told them that all day. I was here all day talking to them, telling them that. My counterparts and other people like me were out around all areas telling them all day. Mm. Everyone was out. All the Sinn Féin people were out. Any of the SDLP people were passing, were telling the kids, hey, listen, the police aren't coming today. They're not coming. Right?
So when you had this organizational meeting right before the election with your people, who's there at the meeting? Who do you coordinate with? Who do you work with? Who do you need to make sure that...
All the people who basically work out of this little centre, who, on this particular occasion, I don't care who... I have no interest in your political background. Never had, you know. Hmm. As long as you were prepared to volunteer, all we wanted you to do was to spread the message. Mm-hmm. That's all we wanted people to do on the night, you know. Spread the message, you know.
So did you put, like... just to get into the really technical, would you send out flyers in the weeks before and saying, hey, everybody who wants to come on over? You know, everybody.
No.
So you're basically picking up your personal mobile and you're just calling friends, colleagues, counterparts and saying, come on.
They all turn up anyway on election night. They would normally come here, right? Because the election's here.
Yeah.
So we come here, we would drink tea and coffee,
and check what's happening in the area. We might get a call, they say, you know, in previous years, listen, boys, you need to get up to such and such a street. They've got a crate of petrol bombs, you know, whatever, you know, that type of stuff, you know.
But then there are these, the actors here, yourself included, but then there are others that are out there as well.
Sure.
And who are those others?
In terms of what, Michael? What do you mean?
There are other former elder IRA individuals, for instance, who are sort of pushing back the youth and
probably
scaring them away.
Those people.
Do you coordinate with them at all, or are they doing sort of their own separate thing?
No, it's all coordinated through us.
Yeah. And even with the political parties representatives who are out here,
they're quite happy to have somebody. See, the overarching thing in all of this is we all had the one objective. Mm. We were desperate to see an end of the mindless violence of election night. Mm. No one really cared about labels. You know, there was a mixture of all types of people out there. There was Sinn Féin people, there was SDLP people, there was all types of people. Ordinary folk, youth workers, you know. There was just a mixture of people, you know.
I would imagine it was.
And it's not as, you know, we're not an army. We're not a police service. It's not as hierarchical as you think, you know, here's the top company. We don't work like that. This community would never work like that. You have to persuade by reason and all that, you know. It doesn't work by saying I'm in charge.
So when you discover that there is a stockpile of petrol at a house 500 meters from here, does the persuasion always work, or did it always work? Were you successful?
No, of course not. But on many occasions were there.
What would the adults, whoever it was, what would they say in response? What would you say to them? Maybe you could. Perhaps the best question would be just to give us an example of we would do something where you.
Well, sometimes if we find out where they are, we just go and lift them. Simple as that. Sometimes we find out maybe they have stuff, but we don't know where it is. We go and try and talk to them and say, listen, all you're doing is damaging your own community. The police are going to be here for 5 minutes, lifting the election boxes and away, and ignore them, you know? Mm. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, Michael. But in many occasions it didn't. We had some serious rioting out here. On all our occasions, we managed to keep it fairly low key, but we never had any occasions when we had no rioting. We had rioting on a scale of 1 to 10, take your pick. Some years it was 2, some years it was 10. Mm-hmm. You know?
And you, as a community activist, I think the point you were making before is a great one. That it's, in many ways, it's a small community. People know people, so you have a good idea, and probably still to this very day.
There's nobody we don't know.
Who those kids are that are going to be out there making trouble? You know where they live. You know where they sleep.
Of course.
You know their parents.
Of course.
So, are you taking steps in the weeks and the months leading up to the election day to go talk to the parents, to knock on the door, and say, look, the election's next month. Make sure Johnny stays home. Keep him inside.
All of that gets done at various levels. But we find that in this particular community, they grow up very quickly. So we find, you know, that we're better talking directly to them. But I make the point, Michael, we don't always get the result. The other thing is that you need to look at it, and you sit around with the young people, they don't see it as causing trouble for the community. They will look particularly at the Sinn Féin people. They will look at them and say, well, you did it for years. You did it. I'm just carrying on what you did. So a difficult argument and difficult persuasions, but, you know, various levels of success. But we never, ever, ever had 1 year with no violence. Never. It was just various levels of violence until that year.
Somebody who is not familiar with the situation here and geography and the layout here where there's hiding spots and shops might ask the question, well, if you had, and according to Sinn Féin, they would say they had hundreds of Sinn Féin representatives at this very polling site on election day. If you had literally hundreds of community activists political party representatives, why couldn't you, by sheer physical force alone, stop the violence from happening?
Because we all, and again, I can't speak for Sinn Féin, they'll speak for themselves, but we voted as a people to end violence.
Oh, sorry. On polling day itself, physically
do what, Michael? I want you to think about this. It's practically impossible, Michael. It is practically impossible, all in that you're prepared to actually fight. If a kid stands there and I say, and he's got a petrol bomb, and I say, don't throw that, and he throws it, what?
What are you going to do?
What am I going to do? Exactly. And we live in this community. And after election night, when the police are gone, and when the council have come and cleaned the area up, we live here. And these are our kids. And their parents are our friends. So this was about reason and rationale as much as possible, about nothing else. No one here was prepared to use physical violence. No, mm-hmm. Not going to happen. Just was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know. And if you look at it, if you had done that, Michael, there's two ways to treat an illness. You can treat the symptoms or the cause. If you had hundreds of people pushing back the kids, you're dealing with the symptoms, and you might get away with it for 1 year. The next year, kids being kids, they'll find a way around it. So you've only treated the symptoms. I like to believe, treated the cause. The cause was the fact that the police were here, and not only were they here, you knew they were going to be here, you knew roughly what time they were going to be here, you knew they were going to be in armoured vehicles. So a night's fun, inverted commas, was guaranteed for all those who wanted it. And a night, and those who genuinely didn't, you know, for whatever reason, hated the police, they would be there as well. So you've that whole mixture. So I like to believe that what happened there was that the cause went directly for the cause, and it worked. And I repeat again, I was not convinced at the start that this would work, but it did.
Did you know of any mothers' groups? That's something that I've heard too, is that there were really vocal mothers who were part of this sort of coalition that were out there.
Yes, there were mothers out there, absolutely, of course. Yeah.
Were they organized amongst themselves in any way? Were they working through this office here?
Well, there was a small group of Mullers who I think were from the old Library Trust, who came and stood beside us, you know, community Mullers, you know. But we would get that anyway, you know. I mean, I keep making this point, Michael. Everyone wanted this to stop. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, the adult community, by and large, wanted this to stop. Hmm. You didn't have to. This was one where you didn't have to sell the idea.
Yeah.
Nothing. Only we had to sell the idea to the police. Yes.
Yeah.
Not to our community.
And before the decision was made, I mean, it seems that every year there were new tactics on your part also tried. At one point there was a corridor, a 300 foot.
Again, I'm coming back. Yeah. I'm coming back to the point that we were dealing with the symptoms, not the cause.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's all you were doing every year. It didn't matter what you come up with, because. Let me also say this. This is a well-known fact. Any psychologist will tell you. A young person's brain will find 100 different ways to do something, whereas an adult's brain might find 5 or 6. So that was a game we were going to lose eventually, because they're so ingenious, you know. That's the whole beauty about being young. Yeah. They don't have any constraints in their minds or their thinking. So we would have lost that eventually. You know?
Yeah. I'm conscious of taking too much of your time, so maybe I'll just sort of wind my way to the finish here. I'm just curious, as you look to the next decade or so and elections here, it's been peaceful now since 2005 on election day. Will it continue to, will that peace hold? And are there, outside of the police staying away, are there other things that could happen, that may happen, that would cause there to be violence on Election Day?
Yes, of course. We'd be very foolish to say there isn't. There are people who don't believe in this peace process, and they're entitled to their view. But so far, they also, even if they don't want to take part, have respected the electoral process. And I would see that continuing. I would say it would be very, very counterproductive for any group to attack
the elections, because I you know, or the electoral process, because I believed that that would awaken a sleeping giant, the silent majority who just want to go and vote, you know. So it would be very counterproductive, you know, very counterproductive. So I believe that elections will continue to be violence-free.
Thanks very much for your time.
No problem.
Appreciate it.